Ladies and gentlemen, good day, and welcome to the Orchid Pharma Limited Q4 FY23 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Manish Dhanuka, Managing Director. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good evening, and welcome all of you to the annual results call of Orchid Pharma Limited. I have with me my co-director, Mridul Dhanuka. We are happy to share the results for the financial year 2022-23. The fourth quarter continues to be the largest quarter for the financial year, as we have seen over the last three years. We achieved a growth of 31% over the last quarter and a growth of 16% over the corresponding quarter last year. With respect to the financial year, the year-on-year growth is 20% in revenue, and the growth on EBITDA is 55%. Although we were able to turn around Orchid within the first year itself, from the takeover on 31st March 2020, and turn the EBITDA positive, I'm happy to report that this year we are having a positive PAT also. The PAT for the full year before exceptional items is 16 crore rupees. It gives me a lot of satisfaction to announce that our conceived plan as the acquisition to hive off the non-core assets are complete now with the sale of corporate office, and the term debt, which was 427 crore taken for the acquisition of the company, is now reduced to 81 crore, despite an additional investment of rupees 31 crore for capacity expansion. This capacity expansion includes commissioning of a new sterile plant, which will add the fifth plant, or maybe a 20% of the sterile capacity would be added, and we hope this will give a significant boost to the sales this year. With the reduction of debt and consolidation of the acquired business, we will now move towards our future in a more confident way. The most important step in this direction is the setting up of the 7-ACA plant, a step towards backward integration. We have signed a technology agreement with an international biotech company having expertise in fermentation technology, and this company is basically supplying technology to even the Chinese manufacturers, so we feel that we have got access to the state-of-the-art technology. We are making good progress in developing ANDAs to be filed in the U.S. for the products that are getting off patent in the next three years. We will now take the questions, if any.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is on the line of Himanshu Upadhyay from O3 PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Am I audible?
Yes, Himanshu, we can hear you.
Yeah. Congratulations on good set of numbers.
Thanks.
It seems that, on the cost side, we have done pretty, or we are through the difficult phase, okay? Now the focus will be more on revenue growth. And so my first question is on the revenue side, okay? See, this whole traction of nearly 450 crore-700 crore of revenue, what we have achieved, which is quite remarkable. Initially, we had three areas to focus on, okay, to get revenue. One was to get newer clients, the second was new products, And the third was more from the existing products, okay? Can you elaborate on where are we in that trajectory and how many newer clients you would have added in from FY21 to now? And similarly, new products, and how much would be from existing clients itself?
Yeah, Himanshu, it's a complicated question to answer. Unfortunately, customer numbers, we will not be able to comment. Also, what also happens is a lot of the customers who would be the end user of our product get their product contract manufactured at various sites. So I'll give an example of an Indian company. Let's say Cipla wants to buy our end product. They might use three different custom manufacturing sites to actually procure the product in and then buy the product. So our end customer remains Cipla, but that never reflects in our sales number. So it's but which CDMO bought our product might change every year. So it's difficult to say how many we have gained in numbers, but we have added significant amount of number of customers in various markets. And when I mean customers, even the same product addition to the same customer is also same amount of work in pharmaceuticals, as you would understand. So I can't talk about numbers specifically, but definitely more than 50.
More than
50.
And in the product basket, have we significantly changed means or the scope on that side, where are we? Means newer products and what revenue contribution can be picked there from those new products?
Yeah, Himanshu, I must compliment you. It's a very, very intelligent question, I think. Even, I mean, I did not think it like this. So Mridul has answered about the number of customers. I'll try and address your question regarding the products. So what we have done is we have definitely realigned our product mix, and we have gone towards the products which are giving a better value addition, and we have tried to reduce the products which were less value added. So there are 3 to 4 products which we have added in our basket, and where I am happy to say that we have been able to completely stop the Chinese imports also. So that definitely helped us in the bottom line.
Okay. And one thing in geographical aspect, US, there were certain challenges, okay, how to enter that market, and because of historical reasons, where are we in terms of negotiating and getting newer clients in America? Europe was always a strength for Orchid, but can you elaborate on where are we on our journey to get more business from America as a continent?
Yeah, so we hear a lot of news about the competition in the US market now. I mean, there is stress on a lot of pharma companies who have been traditionally making large profits in the US market. But fortunately, it is different in our case, in the injectable case, and more so in the cephalosporins. As you can see, there are hardly any US FDA approved injectable plants, not just the API, even the formulation. So we enjoy kind of, I would say, much less competition with only, I believe, 2 or 3 other players who can supply to US market. So in that aspect, we've said in the last call also, we are gaining traction with few customers. And one significant development is that we have got approval for one of the products, for which commercial supplies also have started for the US market. For European market also, I mean, the competition is relatively less, and Orchid enjoys a good reputation. So we are definitely getting a more share of the regulated markets.
Just to give another color, which will, you know, tie up your question, maybe able to answer it better. So when you look at our regulated market versus ROW comparison, earlier, you know, in the first 2 years of our operation, this number had swung more toward the ROW, with the split going regulated versus ROW to 40-60. This year, with our increased efforts in various other regulated markets, so this number is crept up slightly from this 40-41% to roughly 44-45%. So we are making progress on that side. But yeah.
Yeah, once again, compliment, Himanshu. You summarized our entire strategy in a single sentence. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks. See, one more thing. How large is the market for ceftazidime AV Bactam, which we launched in this quarter? And what can be, so we launched with four people, okay, that API, okay, formulators. Is there anybody who has launched without us, and what is the size of that market, and how successful is it been, and what complexity would be that product, and some idea on that?
Yeah, so it's a two things. It's a very complex product, number one. Number two, see, this is a life-saving drug, and you know, when all other bacteria have resistance, this only works. So we feel Orchid is in leadership position in this product. In the Indian market, we launched on the first day, and we hope, we are planning now to file for the ANDA in the US market also, and we hope to be leader in the US as well.
What is the size of the Indian market?
So global market is roughly $500 million, and Indian market, instead of value, the right way to look at it, because it's nascent and price discovery to consumers still happening. So I'll give you in terms of vials. Roughly Pfizer, just before the patent, was selling roughly 25,000 vials or so. We believe the market total will expand by 4 to 5 times in the next year or two.
So annually 1 lakh vials you are expecting?
Yeah, that is the minimum within the first year, yeah.
Okay. And one last thing, the fifth line of sterile, which we were to start in June, so next month, are we ready with the plant, or further something is required for?
Yeah, we are on schedule.
Okay. Thank you. I'll join back for further queries. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Rupesh Tatliya from Intel Sense Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, congratulations, sir, on a fantastic set of numbers and, you know, significant margin improvement. My first set of questions are on Enmetazobactam. So, sir, I mean, where are we on the, you know, commercialization in India and also in the global world markets? Do you have kind of like some visibility of what Allecra is doing?
So for the European market, we can see on the EMEA website that the new drug application has been filed with them sometime in the month of January or February. So in Europe, it should be about a 6 to 8 months kind of approval. So earlier, last time when we were talking, we were saying that, we don't know when the product might be launched because Allecra doesn't share much information with us. But looking at the filing, which has been accepted by the European Medicine Agency, we believe definitely for Europe, the product will be launched this year. And similarly, our thoughts around Chinese and US launch should also happen this year. But unfortunately, we don't have much information on those. For the India market, actually, we were hoping that we might come with an announcement, but unfortunately, it's not happened. But maybe within this week, we'll be filing for clinical trials, our application, and then maybe another year for the product to launch.
Okay, okay. We are expecting some royalty from China, right? So is that linked to this kind of like approval or?
No, so Chinese royalty will come when sales in China start. That has nothing to do with our clinical trials in India. That is only for the Indian market.
No. So in Chinese market, is there only sales related royalty, or is there some milestone kind of like payment?
Yeah, Orchid for all the markets is only, Orchid for all the markets is only entitled to sales related royalty. We don't have any milestone payments, etc. Those will go to Allecra.
Even for Chinese markets?
For all the markets.
Okay, okay. And maybe slightly more kind of like technical questions. So how do you think the performance of enmetazobactam is versus, let's say, you know, avibactam or I see some 5 or 6 innovators are also trying in these fields. Most of them are in phase 3. So how do you feel, you know, is the performance of enmetazobactam versus avibactam and some of these new products?
So for phase 3 products, it would be difficult to comment, you know, unless the trial results are published. I can talk about ceftazidime and avibactam. So it's a completely different segment. Ceftazidime, avibactam, a very large product, like I just shared, $500 million global size. But ceftazidime, avibactam is not the first line of treatment. So once an infection happens, they don't give this product as the first choice. It is only given when, with the normal antibiotic, the infection is not cured. While enmetazobactam is positioned to be the first line treatment, in case you are suffering from cUTI, instead of piperacillin tazobactam, which is the current standard of care, it is advised that cefepime enmetazobactam should be administered. So they are completely different segments, therefore non-comparable. With respect to Piptaz, which is a very large product and the standard of care, against 59% efficacy, cefepime enmetazobactam has 79% efficacy.
Okay, and sir, I mean, can you also talk about what indications it is approved for? Because somewhere I read that you also, you know, want to do phase 3 trials for complicated UTI and pyelonephritis.
Yeah, so both those indications it's approved for. Cefepime as a drug for Europe market is also approved for intra-abdominal infections and IAI. But for cefepime enmetazobactam combination for Europe market, the EMEA said that once you get approval as a new drug, it will be auto-approved for hospital-acquired and community-acquired pneumonia as well. In India, we have to see what the approval comes. The clinical trials will be only on cUTI. But basically, since the drug cefepime works on all three largest indications, which is abdominal, pneumonia, and UTI, so we believe at the end the usage might be triggered by all these factors.
Okay. And final kind of like question, sir. So this, I mean, based on whatever I have read, this is the only product which, you know, has phase 3 cleared, and you know, we're very close to getting an ANDA. And in one of your older presentation, you had indicated a really large, you know, market size. So, and obviously, I mean, you didn't start this product, or the old management started this product, but how confident are you that Allecra is the right partner, whichever Chinese partner is the right partner, they have the right, you know, focus, they have the right kind of like velocity to, you know, go commercialize this product and make it successful?
So first thing to see is, you know, Allecra is a private equity funded company largely by, you know, not XYZ players, they are large global players. One of the partners is Boehringer Ingelheim, the large German pharmaceutical company. Then there are the Rothschilds and people like that. So they are very smart people to actually choose the right partners in various countries. Secondly, coming to Shanghai Haini Pharmaceutical, again, it's a very large, I think top 5 pharma companies of China. Now, they have paid $80 million upfront. I don't think, without looking at the potential of the product and the possibility to generate profits out of that, they would have invested in it. So all these things give us the right indication, but at the end, you know, the proof of the pudding is in eating it. So once the royalty flow starts, we'll have more information and validation of our thoughts.
So if you feel that there is enough, you know, focus and kind of like velocity to make things happen in retrospective.
Yes. And yeah, so one thing which has moved from the last call forward is the filing of the European application. The U.S. application, unfortunately, we can't see in public domain, but my belief is that it should also have been filed, but we don't have information.
You see, antimicrobial resistance is a very big menace right now that mankind is facing. If you go to WHO website, they mention that antimicrobial resistance could be the next pandemic. So, and unfortunately, not many new molecules in antibiotics are coming. So we feel that an antibiotic which can work on different bacterial strains, resistant strains, is very much need of the hour, and we feel, I mean, this molecule is not just going to be financially good for Orchid, but it is very much required for the healthcare safety of the world.
Yeah, sir, I have read all the literature. It's truly exciting, and it I mean, we are really close to commercialization also. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, so we have actually requested DCGI for a waiver of clinical trial also. In case we are able to get the waiver, then the launch could be earlier also. But we have made the protocol as well. So we will go as per the advice of the drug controller.
Okay. So my next kind of like area of question is in new products. So, I mean, can you give some indication about what was the contribution of ceftazidime plus avibactam in Q4, and was that, you know, primary driver for margin improvement?
Unfortunately, we can't give product-wise information. Sorry for that. From zero to the number is significantly high, and the gross margins I can share. The gross margins are also better than the overall blended gross margins that we have.
Okay. And sir, in your
sorry to interrupt, Mr. Rupesh. May we request that you return to the question queue? There are participants waiting for their turn.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitesh Dutt from Berman Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for the opportunity. I have 3-4 questions. The first one is, can you break revenue growth in Q4 into various components, maybe price, volume, by geography, new customers, new products, etc.? And also, is it sustainable, or does it include any one-off supplies, any one-off contracts that will taper off in future quarters?
Yeah, thanks for that. Unfortunately, quarter-wise breakup I won't be able to provide. Our annual breakup continues to remain same on oral versus sterile, which is 1/3, 2/3. 1/3 towards sterile and 2/3 towards oral. This long-term trend would continue. In terms of regulated versus ROW, last financial year ending, regulated was roughly 40-41 and ROW was roughly 59-60. This year, ending is roughly regulated 45% and ROW business is roughly 55%. So that also led to some of the margin improvement that is there. And going forward, when you look at EBITDA margins, so if you see what is going to happen, and we have talked about it earlier, our sales will increase more and the expenses will increase as a percentage less, because we'll be sweating and leveraging our assets more. Like this year, the sales has overall increased by roughly 20%, while the expenses have increased by low double digits. So that's what margin expansion is going to contribute going forward as well.
Got it. Can you break up the sales growth into price and volume? So if we compare Q4 and Q3, the 31% jump, will you be able to break it up by volume and price?
No, that wouldn't make sense with the wide range of product Orchid makes. You know, we make almost 35 products, and some of the capacity is fungible specifically in sterile products. So to ensure that we are fully utilized in terms of capacity, we change based on orders from A product to B product. So suddenly, the volume comparison is also not possible. One product is $100, the other is, let's say, $2,000 a kilogram. So there cannot be any comparison with respect to that.
Understand. My next question is on N-metazobactam. So the value of royalties is estimated as $16 million to $25 million in previous presentations. So assuming filings happen within the next year, can we assume that this will start flowing by FY25 or at least partly by FY25?
So unfortunately, due to the QIP process starting, I can't make many forward-looking statements. But if the filing happens, immediately the customer launch should happen. That is what my assumption would be. And every quarter we are due that royalty. So as soon as the sales start happening, the royalty would start flowing in. And if looking at the trends of the filing in Europe, we believe definitely the royalty should start flowing in within this year.
Understood. My last question is on price erosion. This is both for your existing set of molecules plus as well as ACA, the PLI one. So are you facing still facing steep price competition, especially from Chinese players? This is for existing molecules. And for 7-ACA also, would you be competitive with the current suppliers in the market?
Yeah, I'll answer the second question first, which is about 7-ACA. So like Mr. Manish alluded in his opening speech, our technology partner is, you know, the same person who supplied company technology to other Chinese companies. So we believe we are going to get access to the best technology in the world. So I don't see any disadvantage with respect to China on that front. The PLI related benefits and our choice location of Jammu are going to help us only in ensuring that, you know, the initial hiccups of scale up at that time, we are able to sell and still make some money. So on 7-ACA, we are fairly confident that we won't have any disadvantage against China. On the first part, when you said, price competition from China, that will always be there in emerging markets. But like I said, Orchid's large part of the business, a significantly large chunk is regulated market where price does not play the primary role. The quality and approvals play the primary role. Yet at the same time, the pricing pressure is always there. But fortunately, cephalosporin technology, India is much ahead than China. And specifically for the oral product, if you look, India should be 2 or 3 times the capacity of the Chinese company. For sterile products, ceftriaxone is the largest sterile product in cephalosporin in the world, where China has much larger capacity. But Orchid's contribution largely comes from other sterile products, which are very niche, small volume products. Orchid is probably the only one or maybe the only two players of the world who is making these products. So that's where the price competition is lesser.
Thanks. Understood. Just one more question. So I understand you have two important new molecules, ceftaroline and ceftazidime avibactam, which you talked about slightly earlier. So these two molecules, how much can they contribute, let's say three years, 5 years down the line? What percentage of your top line might come from these two molecules? Any ballpark figures on that?
Unfortunately, this is a forward-looking statement, but I can give you some color with respect to market size and our thought around that. So ceftaroline, largest contribution will come from US, which is a $150, $160 million kind of market. So with generic products coming in the market, the price would slightly fall, the volume would increase. And we should be able to get, being the two or three players in the market, a 20-25% kind of market share. So that's our thought around ceftaroline. And on ceftazidime avibactam, like I said, for India, this product has the potential to be a very large product like India has shown, and a similar kind of market size of, you know, the overall market, specifically for US, where we are targeting a Para IV filing, those benefits would accrue to us.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sajal Kapoor, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Congratulations on good results, solid execution. Well done. I have a couple of questions. First up, culture and chemistry go hand in hand, right? So how has the culture been transformed since Dhanuka Group took over? What concrete steps have been taken? That's one. And then the second question would be, don't you think that many generic antibiotics are kind of a sunset sector due to older therapies and drug resistance, etc.? And then within antibiotics, the cephalosporin space is too small, so opportunity size is perhaps not great if we look 5 years out. So what steps are we taking on the R&D capability technology side today so that we can be, worthwhile and relevant 5 years out? Thank you.
Yeah, interesting question. So first, you know, I'd like to compliment Orchid team with respect to the culture. what you mentioned. I think we, Orchid Pharma, had an excellent team, very capable, and I mean, it's been a good experience working with them. The scientists out there are quite extraordinary. All we needed to do was infuse some energy and motivation, and we hope we have been able to do that. And your next question regarding antibiotics, it gives a general impression, you know, in pharma industry that antibiotic is an old molecule base, and there is not much of a growth. But on the contrary, antibiotics are one class of molecules which will always continue to grow, because whatever happens, you know, the infections are going to be there. And not just infections, any surgery, any procedure, you need an antibiotic whether you have an infection or not, as a prophylactic itself. And particularly, more particularly, you know, cephalosporin is the largest class of antibiotics. So cephalosporin is not going anywhere. And in cephalosporin also, Orchid is the only company which commercially manufactures 25 out of 30 approved antibiotics, be it oral or sterile. So that I think Orchid has the largest range of cephalosporin antibiotics, not just in India, probably in the world. So I think Orchid has a good opportunity to grow. And with respect to our growth plans, you know, we are trying to cover the foundation by going for backward integration and increasing our capacity, so we can leverage the overall strength of Orchid in a better way. And at the same time, we are going up the value chain by filing ANDAs in the US market, where we can get a better valuation, better realization as well. Hope I could answer your question.
No, that's helpful. And how fungible are our capacities across both oral and sterile?
Yeah, Sajal, for sterile, the capacities are pretty fungible. We can divide the product into two broad categories of crystalline and lyophilized products. So between these two, it is not fungible, but bulk, maybe 90% of the products or even 95% of the products are crystalline. And out of our now 5 blocks, 4 are for crystalline, 1 is for lyophilized products. So for between those 4 blocks, it's pretty fungible. At the same time, some customers are very specific with respect to which plant they would buy from. They would come and audit only in that plant. So with respect to that particular customer, it may not be that fungible, but in general, for products, markets, it is pretty fungible. On the oral side, because the volumes are very, very large, now what we are making, we have set up dedicated capacities for the largest products, which theoretically being fungible, but we don't need to change. We are practically using them fully. There are some blocks which are more multipurpose, where we make smaller niche products.
Absolutely. And some of the Japanese customers, they are very stringent, not just at the plant level but the block level. And they just go at the reactor level. And you can't even change the reactor, so fully appreciate that. And what really needs to happen to generate a lot of cash this year and next? Because I see there is some debt on our books as well. So I would like to see us to be, you know, reducing that debt, if not completely debt-free. So what really needs to happen to generate a lot of cash this year and next, please? Thank you.
Yeah, so our trajectory should continue the way it has. And what will happen next year is our depreciation would go down significantly. And we have plans of raising primary capital. Once that comes in, a lot of the debt would be settled by that. But at the same time, company has a lot of capex plans. So to fund that capex, for example, the 7-ACA project is of roughly 5 to 600 crore investment. So to fund that, we are going to have to take a fresh debt as well. So what positive you will be able to see is the old debt would continue to be retired, and for the new capacity, fresh debt would be taken. Just like when we had acquired Orchid, we had taken a debt of 427 crores. That debt is down to 50 crores now. And for the new sterile block which we are commissioning, we had taken a debt of, that number stands today at 32, maybe 10 odd crores. We will need more to finish that before we start. So that trend will continue to happen. We will make fresh investment, take some fresh debt for that. Old will get continue to retire.
Sure. So growth because that for growth CapEx is absolutely fine as long as our return.
Sir, may we request that you return to
the last question. This was the last question.
Okay, sir.
That is fine for growth capex as long as our return on the target return on capital is far superior than the cost of capital. So, do we work with, and I'm sure we must be having a framework, and what sort of target return on capital do we say, let's say 3 to 5 years out when the capacities are fully up and running, because there is always a gestation period in our business. Do you guys work with some sort of a framework? I'm sure you do, right?
So there are two kinds of return on capital when you say, you know, we can talk about. One is the typical ROC number that you look at. The problem with Orchid numbers are, you know, because of the past things that we carry in our balance sheet, when you calculate the ROC just like that, that doesn't give a right number because of the large asset base and low capacity utilization. But going forward, obviously, you know, our intention for acquiring the business is that the number should match the best in class, or at least the norm, median numbers, let me not say best in class. So it should be a profitable business. And if we are able to generate, like you said, cash like we have generating now, and we have paid the loans by some of the non-core assets and by cash as well. So both these things will continue to happen in the forward as well. If we don't see a payback period normally whenever we invest within the next 3 to 4 years, then we don't invest the capital. That's the thought process behind the management.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. All the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil from SIMPL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening and congratulations on a good set of numbers and appreciation to the team for a great work since 2018. Just 2-3 questions. One is, Nidhil, you mentioned that the improvement in the profitability is more driven by the mix of business moving towards regulated versus non-reg. But on a secondary side, if you look at the last whole of year, most API companies were facing issues with higher RM prices and freight costs and power and fuel. How much of it is still in the P&L with a higher base where you would believe that the costs are going down, or on the cost side, you believe largely whatever normalization had to happen at that?
Yeah, thanks for the compliment. There are 2-3 factors at play here. I talked about that the regulated market business has improved. But if you look at the gross margin level overall, in spite of that improving a little, we have fallen from roughly 44% to 42%. So the pricing pressure and the raw material cost increase factors are there. What we have done to manage that is specifically, you know, you remember earlier calls we talked about the large energy cost which is on our books. So for that, the investment in solar plant has worked well for us. That investment has paid off already for itself. And that roughly 5 crore we had invested. So these kind of things on energy conservation and other ideas and changing of product mix, this is what is going to continue to drive it going forward, despite the price increase. Whatever price increase happens, especially in emerging markets, is quickly passed on to the customer. Maybe with a smaller lag, it is more difficult to pass it on to regulated market customers. But at the same time, the converse also works well with them. When the price falls, that much more money we make at that time. So now the prices are rationalizing in China, where we source a lot of our raw materials. So those will benefit, the benefits will come to us going forward.
Okay. And just adding to that, if we remember last 2-3 calls and our utilization in sterile and oral dosage, on sterile, I think we were at optimum utilization and that's why we were putting the capacities, but in oral, the utilization was still low. So where, what, by year end, so for this financial year, what would be the utilization on the oral dosage side and how has it moved over FY22?
Yeah, so last year we are roughly at 60%. This year we would be roughly at 70%. You understand a lot of this also depends on what product we make in the plant. So this would again improve by a few percentage points next year. And on the sterile side, we were at roughly 90-95%. And with the new plant added and commissioned, we would endeavor to run it at full utilization from the word go.
This sterile new plant is adding 25% more to the capacity, right?
Yes. 25% on the sterile side, yes.
Okay. And last question on the U.S. ANDA. So in our previous call, we had mentioned that there were 11 ANDAs in the name of Orchid, which we were looking at probably commercializing, and we had shared also the market sizes. So are those opportunities still relevant, or would you say that they are no more relevant and only new filings would be meaningful?
Yeah. So the challenge with the old ANDAs is finding an FDF site, which is U.S. FDA approved. Like Mr. Manish explained earlier, there are not many sites which are U.S. FDA approved to make the product. Orchid is still looking for oral sites. All those ANDAs are on the oral space to make these products. Some of the products are still relevant. So we have retained out of those 11, five ANDAs, and we have sold a few of those ANDAs as well, which we thought were not relevant for our portfolio. The new filings, all are the patents which are going off, are all in the sterile space. So first, the revenue should start coming from there. We are still looking for contract manufacturing companies who can, U.S. FDA approved, who can make this product for us. So five ANDAs still relevant, but first sales will come from the new sterile product.
Sure, I'll come back in with you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in this conference, we request you to limit your questions to two per participant only. The next question is on the line of Ruchita Kadge from iWealth. Please go ahead. Ruchita, your line is on the talk mode. Please go ahead. As there's no response from the current participant, we'll move on to the next. That is on the line of Aditya Sen from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please proceed.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just wanted to understand if this could be a basic question, but I just wanted to understand if the present revenue and EBITDA is sustainable for the coming year. And since we are doing the CapEx, can you please let me know what's the scale of CapEx that we are doing?
Yeah. So in terms of scale, you asked scale of CapEx, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So roughly 30-odd crores we've already spent, and before the plant is commissioned, 10 more will need to be spent. This will add roughly 25% capacity to our sterile product. The sterile products are today roughly one-third of the revenue, and we expect a good growth coming from this within this year after commissioning. So the trajectory of revenue, I can't make a forward-looking statement, but whatever we have said in the past, that should continue.
Okay, so if I can ask any aspirational figure that we are aiming towards in the coming 3, 4, 5 years?
Sorry, any what?
Any aspirational target that we might have?
No, unfortunately, sorry, I can't make forward-looking statements due to the QIP process going on. Sorry.
Okay, okay. No issues. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tarang Agrawal from Old Bridge Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and congratulations for an extremely strong set of numbers. A couple of questions from me, sir. One, if I look at the NCE, right, which product is the NCE likely to replace if it were to come through?
You're talking about enmetazobactam. So replacement, it will take away market share from three different type of products. I'll give a color on the India market, and the numbers are available on our presentation earlier. So first is piperacillin tazobactam. That is the standard of care of UTI today. So it will take share from that. That's roughly 1,000 crores. And second product is ceftriaxone, which is the largest selling antibiotic in India. the first product to be administered generally. It will take away share from that. And because of resistance against these two existing products, carbapenems are used, largely meropenem, again a very large product for the country. So during this, this will take away share from that as well.
Okay. What is the second product you said? Ceftazidime sulfate, is it?
No. So ceftriaxone. Second product is ceftriaxone.
Ceftriaxone. Okay.
Yeah.
So the same trend would perhaps follow in the regulated markets as well, as in when you get approvals there, correct?
So regulated market, yes, they, every country has a different antimicrobiogram, which means they have a different profile of which bacteria affects for a particular disease. So it would depend on market to market. But piperacillin tazobactam, especially in areas where doctor decides more judiciously, like in India, typically, let's say a daily wage worker goes to a doctor and says, you know, I want to go to my job tomorrow, you give me a shot. So doctor might do that. In US or something, they might first test which bacteria you are suffering from, only then they will give the antibiotic. So there the replacement antibiotic could be different. But piperacillin tazobactam is definitely going to be the primary product of replacement.
Okay, got it. Second, sir, on Zavicheft, my sense is it's currently at about 5,000 rupees per injection. So how does it work? I mean, when you said 25,000 vials would perhaps go to 1 lakh vials, it's this particular each injection, or if you could just give us some color, and how would the API value be here? A broad brush, yeah. I'm not looking at exact numbers.
Yeah, sure. So I am not sure of the market price of the product. It should have fallen after genericization, but I don't think the generic companies, because it's just 3 months since the generic product became generic. So 25,000 vials, when I meant per month, I meant the each individual vial only.
Okay.
And I will not be able to disclose the API price in this particular product right now.
I understand.
Yeah.
And the third question is, if you could just give us a broad brush on how your GCs would differ between regulated and other markets, and how your GCs would be between a sterile product and an oral product.
Great question, Tarang, but again a complicated one. Sorry for a convoluted answer you are going to hear, but depends on, in general, if I say sterile products have higher gross margins than oral products, right? But the oral products, some of the products in regulated markets have very different kind of margin profiles, largely due to, you know, who's the end customer. So in one oral product where we have tied up with the innovator, there the gross margins are very, very high. But some of the other products where we are one of the two or three people selling, there is no exclusivity deal, the gross margins are lower. So the similar pattern continues in sterile products. So some of the products, like one of the new products we are making, will be priced at, let's say, $40,000 per kilogram. Here gross margins will be very, very high. But at the end, if you look at product-wise net margin, the quantity would be so small that the overhead loaded on this product would be higher.
Hmm.
Have I been able to answer your question?
I mean, quite convoluted, but I understand the limitations of the forum. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Agastya Dave from CAO Capital. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Sir, most of my questions have been answered. They were around capacity utilizations and products. Some of them you have answered. Some I understand you can't answer so openly. Sir, I have a basic question on how this company will move forward. So as of now, you are operating very close to full utilization, and you have a new plant about with respect to the backward integration. Yeah, for 7-ACA. and you're raising money, right? So is this the model that we'll be following, that every time we need, we'll go for large projects and raise a lot of capital, or this is a one-off, how often do you think we need to dilute?
So I wish I have so many projects of investment of 500-600 crore in the near future, and so if that is there, we definitely will have to come to the market. But once the 780 project will come into play, that will generate a lot of cash for the company, and small business as usual expansion will be internally funded, and we won't need to come to the market for that.
And so this 7ACA plant, what is the total capex that you'll be undertaking? And can I apply the usual rule of thumb of what a fermentation plant looks like with respect to asset turnovers and margins to 7ACA, or is it something different?
Yeah, so the capex is 500 to 600 crores. But about the margins, I won't be able to talk right now because of the limitations of QIP process. Sorry on that.
No problem. So is it very similar to other fermentation products, or is it completely, is the economics very, very different?
No, so normal fermentation products, if you talk about other pharmaceutical companies which they make, they are niche products and smaller volumes. Our product will be a 1,000 metric ton scale, and the margins would not be, I am assuming those the margins of, let's say, biosimilars are very, very high. This will not be towards that number because
no, I'm not comparing it. Yeah, I'm not comparing it with biosimilars. I'm looking at just, let's say, any other non-biosimilar fermentation plant that we see in China, right? That would be power intensive, at full utilization, probably 2 times asset turnovers, and at best case, without government support, 17 to 18% margins. Those are the kind of projects that I've seen. I'm pretty sure there will be others, but ballpark, sir, are we looking at a significantly different economics in this plant, or will it be similar?
So our assumption is, if you are comparing to China, our supplier of technology is the same person. We believe the economics should be similar.
Okay. And so this backward integration, this will help you in making all the 24, 25 odd cephalosporins that you make, right? This is not meant for just one or two. This is like 7ACA goes in everything, right?
Yeah. So all cephalosporin antibiotics are made from two key starting materials, penicillin and 7ACA.
Yeah.
So all our sterile products, I think maybe except two, all the sterile products are made from 7ACA. And two oral products are also made from 7ACA. Some of our products are starting from the penicillin route as well. So yes, more than 50% are 7ACA.
And this will, can you give some ballpark understanding of what percentage requirement of your 7ACA will be catered by this project?
Yeah, so 100% of our requirement will be catered by this project. And the idea of setting up was one, backward integration. And second, a lot import replacement also of products which are currently coming from China. So
yes, I got it, sir.
Yeah.
Great. And one final question, sir. In terms of capacity additions, future capacity additions, excluding large projects like 7ACA, will you need a new plant down the line, or there will be incremental capex? You will keep on adding blocks. To what extent can you add capacity at your current location?
Yeah, so at our current location, we roughly have 60 acres of land, out of which roughly 20 acres of land is free. So there is significant headroom to grow within this facility.
And sir, how much are the utilities taking out of this 40 acres which is getting used? So production blocks are occupying what? Half the space?
30% utility, 30% recovery, 40% manufacturing. Just a ballpark.
Yes, 40-30.
I never thought about it like that.
Sure. So basically, that 20 acre can probably give you not double, but very close to like probably 70% additional production blocks.
I'm not sure how you are doing your math, but I would say for the next 5 years, definitely we don't need another site.
Okay. Yeah, I got my answer, sir. Thank you very much, sir. All the best.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Rupesh Tatiya from Intelligence Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for the follow-up. My first question, sir, is if you can give the status of, you know, whether DMF is filed or ANDA is filed for cefovecin and ceftaroline.
Yeah. So, cefovecin ANDA, we won't be filing. It would be filed by our customer. DMF filing paperwork is going on. It is not filed. Similarly, for ceftaroline, DMF filing document preparation is going on. And we won't be filing the ANDA, the customer would be.
Okay, but for ceftazidime avibactam, we will file ANDA, is this that?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And then, sir, in CAPEX, you had talked about, you know, reconfiguring the oral capacity, phasing out of, I don't know, Gen 1, Gen 2, or some low-margin products. So can you update some progress on that?
Yeah, so that's at design stage right now. Once the sterile product block is finished, that's when we will take up the execution of that. Our target to commission that is within last quarter of this financial year. So it will start generating money from next year.
So, roughly, can you give maybe 30% of the capacity of 30% of the capacity is used for low margin products, and then it will be reconfigured to, you know, use new better generation products?
So basically, roughly there was Orchid had 300 to 400 tons capacity of making ciclexin, that is Gen 1 product. So that would be decommissioned, and roughly 100 to 200 tons of various products capacities would come up, which would be Gen 3 products largely.
Okay, I see. And this you're saying you will be commissioned in Q4, okay?
Yes.
And also, can you give some CAPEX numbers for FY24, how much we'll spend, and then other than 7ACA, and then maybe also FY25, if you have visibility.
Yeah, so for this year, the number should be short of 50 crores only. This includes our maintenance CAPEX and this reconfiguration. And for next year, unless we announce some plans and share in public domain, I don't see a large number coming forward. Once our plans are more crystallized, we will be able to share a number.
Okay. And then, sir, we see a really large inventory number in March 23 balance sheet. Can you split it into raw material inventory and finished goods inventory?
Yeah. Can you give me a second to get that number out? So, in terms of increase, I can probably say faster. So, what has happened is, due to various factors and, you know, China having their new year, etc., what is happening is, if I see my numbers correctly, our finished good number is roughly 60-65 crore, and WIP is roughly 70-80 crore, and raw material is 70-80 crore again. Largest increase is actually in raw materials. So this is largely because of price increase of some of the materials. And second is some shipments which have come, you know, just before 31st March, which are intended for April. Maybe they arrived early, I'm not sure. But that is maybe a one-off number for increase in raw materials.
Okay, I see. So my final question is on industry structure. So let us say whatever cephalosporins gets sold in India plus exported out of India, my understanding is there are kind of like three large players, you and then Dhanuka Group company, Nectar Life Sciences, and then there is a Hyderabad-based one company. And then there are big pharma like Lupin and Aurobindo. So between, let's say, five of you, maybe 70-80% of the market is covered. Would that be a fair understanding?
You mean exports out of India?
Total. Whatever is sold in, I mean, production. Let's say whatever is produced in India, India production, whether it's for domestic or export.
Yeah, I think these companies that you mentioned is 95% of the production.
Okay. And then I also see some small companies kind of like putting this cephalosporin capacity. Would it be fair that maybe all of you guys are kind of, you know, moving to newer generation products and this Gen 1, Gen 2 kind of like products, some smaller players are looking at that as an opportunity?
No, I think once you are a cephalosporin facility, you can't make any other product in that. I don't think personally, and it's my personal opinion, that, you know, setting up a facility, small facility for just small Gen 1 products, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to make any money.
Okay. I see. And then, sir, this last question.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Rupesh. May we request that you return to the question queue? There are participants waiting for the answer.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. That is on the line of Nitesh Dutt from Burman Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, I have a question on your existing set of products. So the 28 to 30 existing products, can you just give some color on how you see market growth? So I just want to understand how will growth come from for you? Will it be because of market expansion, market size increase, or are you planning to capture market share from existing other players?
Yeah, good question, actually. So I think both the things will work in our favor. If you look at, you know, international reports of market research, you would see cephalosporin market overall increases by about 3 to 4% every year. But if you look at what happens is there is a price erosion in the, you know, most expensive products in the regulated market slightly. But more than that, there is a high volume increase in markets which are underserved, largely Asia and Africa, where population is increasing and also incomes are increasing where they can have access to medicine. So in terms of, if you look at large volume growth, that's going to come from these markets, and that growth everybody would like to capture. When it comes specifically to Orchid, our growth will be driven by these. At the same time, it will be driven by our availability of capacity, because Orchid is the company of choice because of its quality credentials, US FDA, Europe, Japan, approvals from everywhere in the world. So customers trust our capacity and would like to buy from us. So we will be able to take some share also away from other customers. So both these things will work in our favor.
Understood. And so one more last question is on the PLI for 780A. When do you see top line impact happening? So if I'm not wrong, the total market estimated for 1,000 metric ton was roughly $65 million. So can we expect by FY26 that the entire utilization of the plant will happen and roughly $65-70 million, whatever the number is, will start flowing into the top line?
That's what our intention is.
Understood.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be taking the last question. That is on the line of Nikhil from SIMPL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, and thanks for giving the opportunity. Just two questions. One is on the US FDA plant inspection. So is there anything, because I think our plants were last inspected in 2019, so have we heard anything, or has there been any inspection being done?
No inspection has happened, but we are ready. They can come anytime. Orchid always has one or two inspections almost every week from some customer or the other, so they can come anytime. We are fully ready. That's not a problem we see.
Okay, and last question is that if you look at these 30 products under the cephalosporin family, if you have to understand our focus incrementally, would it be that we would aim to move ourselves in the higher pricing of probably higher value, low volume kind of products? Incrementally, the capacity would be diverted towards that, or would you say that even the volume products are necessary to fulfill the basket? So how should we understand over the next 3-5 years our investments in the plants and all?
Yeah. So my answer would be both.
On the sterile product, the intention would be to go for, because we are already at 100% capacity, so the intention would be to grab more of the higher value products, but maybe lower volume. But on the oral side, since we have spare capacity available, there is no need to give up the existing products which are maybe contributing lesser in terms of value add, but still contributing overall to the bottom line. There is no need to phase them out. So
yeah,
that's what I would say.
So my question was mainly on the oral side, because there the margins are lower as compared to sterile. But so if we, so currently we are at 70, but in a year or two, if we reach something like 80, 90, would you say we would be looking for a new block, or we would be looking for more of reorganization in future?
Yeah, so the 80-90 would be of the existing blocks that would happen. And I answered a previous question, which was about repurposing the capacity of Gen 1 product. So that is already in plan, and that should be finished within this year. So that would allow us to run for another few years with the oral product. But yeah, reduce capacity on Gen 1 and more capacity on Gen 3 on oral products.
Okay, fine. Thanks. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Manish Dhanuka for his closing comments.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your interest in our company. We got some really interesting questions, and we look forward to your patronage. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a good evening, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, members of the management team. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Orchid Pharma Limited, that concludes this conference call. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.